So, okay, so here's the format for, I'm going to say, the next half an hour or so. And I'm going to be a bastard about time, just to warn you. So I'm going to try to set my own good example. The next half an hour is show and tell. And the idea is for anyone who's got a tool, a technology, something that exists already that they are deeply passionate about, think that it's important for the group of people in this room, think that it's important for the future of the web, come up. You have 2 minutes, 2.5 at the absolute outset to come and present that tool. At the end of this half an hour, we're going to unveil the Spirit of America Arabic blogging tool. It's the formal launch for that. And that's going to bring us into a larger discussion of what are the tools that don't exist yet that we want to see exist. So that's where we go from show and tell into brainstorm. But for now, show and tell, we are literally on the clock. I'm going to show and tell Delicious. I got a quick show of hands for who is using Delicious. Okay. So Delicious is a tool getting used a lot by sort of the real alpha geeks at the moment. And what it is a social bookmark manager. What you're able to do is make a list of sites that you look at and bookmark them and then share those bookmarks with another group of people. So Delicious lets you install a pair of buttons into your browser. And when you click on those buttons, it brings you to a page that allows you to add new links. And this is sort of what my links page ends up looking like. So the interesting thing about this is that you can go onto Delicious and you can see my bookmarks, which gets pretty interesting. Beyond there, you can actually go and look at whole collections of bookmarks where I've categorized a set of bookmarks. I tend to keep a lot of bookmarks on Africa. And you can even find subcategories. If you want to see all the things that I've bookmarked about failed states in Africa, which you will be unsurprised to know is a large category, you can find all of these things. Now, one of the interesting things is that you can also see who else has linked to these stories. Oddly enough, no one else seems to link to Africa, so that doesn't happen for those. But if we look at these, the epic, this was a little piece of flash that Rebecca pointed to the other day. 15 other people have pointed to this. So I can find out who else has looked at this, and I can also go and see their bookmarks. So I can decide that given that we have something in common, maybe I want to take a look at Rebecca's bookmarks. And then I can find the 621 items that Rebecca has linked to as well. So I want to suggest this to anyone who blogs in a serious way. This is a remarkably powerful tool for organizing your bookmarks and for sharing them. It's also a fascinating little collaboration tool, and I just want to talk about that really fast. We've started a tag for Global Voices. So if you start a Delicious account and you tag anything as Global Voices, anyone else who knows to look for that Global Voices tag will be able to see those bookmarks. So one of the things that I would suggest, and this is in the whole getting from the abstract to the concrete, one thing we can all start doing as a group is anyone who feels like using Delicious, feel free to grab the Global Voices tag and use that as a way of sharing ideas and URLs with the other people in this room. So that was my 2.5 minutes.
Ask a question?
Maybe. Is it under 15 seconds?
Does it take RSS and OPML? Because I don't use bookmarks anymore. I only use RSS.
There's RSS feeds for everything within this. So you can get RSS feeds for your bookmarks page. You can get RSS feeds for other people's bookmarks pages.
You insert RSS into it, is what I'm asking, instead of bookmarks.
At some point, essentially, I think what you're asking is whether you can go directly from your aggregator into this.
No. I don't use bookmarks. I only use RSS now. Right. So those are my bookmarks. Can I use an OPML file and put that in there as my bookmarks?
Can you import OPML?
Yes.
You cannot yet import OPML. Sorry.
Jack, if that doesn't exist, I'll write it for you.
Bingo.
Okay, who's next?
Do you want to show how I'm using a Delicious feed on my blog?
That might be somewhat useful. You can do that. You could actually talk about the other things that you plug into your blog. So you get 2 minutes.
Well, this is just real quick on the Delicious point, and I'm not going to take up too much time. But one way you can share tags amongst a group of like-minded people. How is this working here?
I'll type. You talk.
Okay. Just go to www.nkzone.org. I've taken an RSS feed of anybody who tags in Korea, North Korea, and I'm running that down the side of my blog. So this is a really good way for communities to share information. Anybody out there who's interested in following North Korea, anytime they go to a web page or a blog post or a news story, that's related to this, they can, yeah, just on the side there. And now I'm running that RSS feed down the side. And so it's just a really good way of sharing information and sharing news really quickly within a community who's all following the same issue. So.
And this involves using FeedRoll, which is actually what allows you to get those RSS feeds on your page and plug that into Delicious. So who wants the next 2 minutes? Who's going to show off? I had a number of people tell me that they were interested in doing stuff. Come on up.
Okay, my name is Josh Ayn. I'm working on an open source software. Is this up there? I'm working on an open source software platform called Frazzle. What it does lots of the things that your normal blogging platforms do, but it also draws connections between different blogs based on what you're pointing to and what you're linking to.
Yes, NetLag is included in the 2 minutes.
Yes, so what we're doing is we're pulling in a lot of other blogs, aggregating them into the system, and whenever somebody links to a certain news page or a certain item, you post whatever you're posting onto that page, and we will compare what you're linking to what other people are writing about and start bringing correlations. So we know that if I write about Howard Stern a whole lot and point to articles on that, and Jeff Jarvis also writes about Howard Stern a whole lot, we will start seeing a correlation that maybe 50% of what I write is also linked to by Jeff, and we'll start making suggestions that maybe you're interested in this post in Jeff's weblog or in somebody else's weblog that I may have never read before. I might not even know he exists. So let me just go under one of my categories here. We have an advanced category system, so we can relate not just individual blogs, but also individual categories within blogs. We treat them as though their own blog, as though they're their own individual blogs. Everything has its own RSS feed, of course. So here we see that in my category development, based on what I've linked in this category, it's similar to Tim Bishop's weblog, Incoming Blogging, Jennifer's weblog, Technology Computer, all these other weblogs and categories within people's blogs, and things which meet a certain prerequisite correlation are showing up here, aggregated into my blog, without my even knowing they had ever existed. Did I beat 2 minutes?
You definitely beat 2 minutes. That's a great way to do it. I have to say, Frazzle is the sort of thing that it actually took me several hours to sort of get a full handle on what it's doing. But it's sort of an amazingly, amazingly powerful tool, and it's worth those few hours if you have them to give. Who else wants 2 minutes?
And let me just add, it's in high development right now, so there's still a lot going on in the system.
Come on down. You're the next contestant.
Thank you.
The blog is right.
Blog. Is this a blog? All right. My name is John Garfunkel. I'm with civilities.net, which I will type in. And if you are scoring at home, you can, because civilities allows you to score at home, I hope. Let's go there. Is this a blog? What is this? Wait a minute. There's no long story running down the side. I saw blogs, I learned about blogs about a year ago, or learned about them 5 years ago, finally started looking at them a year ago. I said, boy, these long 20-page length screens. This comes from the world of online journalism, Slate, New York Times. So I said, what if I just do this? It's RSS, this is based on Drupal. Will be based on CivicSpace soon. And I had a post, saw David on C-SPAN, responded here. A lot of fun. They read my question on C-SPAN. But what's cool, one of the things I tried to say, how do we differentiate? What can we do with the blog or participatory publishing that we have? How can we improve it? One thing that I wanted to solve was the Me Too problem. Is somebody posts, how do you judge whether it's good or not? Somebody says, oh, me too. I like Me Too. Him too. You have people also clip it on another site, which is interesting, but what are they saying about the article other than saying they find it interesting? So I came up with some viewpoints here. These are, looks like I have to sign in to actually get it seen. But you can select a viewpoint, what you think about this article. And in fact, Civ, this is what this is, Civ. What is a sieve structured community? You read this article. Here's how I define it. It has a very strict taxonomy. It has different types of content. It's not just everything's a blog post. That's too generic for me, too abstract. I want, this is a review. This is a reference to another website. This is a question. This is analysis. This is a definition, which is what Wiki does, you know, definition. So I want to have different types. And this particular one is a proposal. This is what a civ is. And here's a discussion. Michael Schertz of 2020 Democrat says, here's his point, and what did he say? Oh. He says, plus sign, which means this facts are valid here. He has a comment. And then I say, no, I'm actually disagreeing. Here's my point. So you can see across an article, you can see that different types of opinions are coming. Anyone who has read Daily Cause, I'm not sure if that's the right verb, anyone who's grokked it, if you have that, that can summarize what's going on, if people are rating it right. Bad things, problems, I have these I picked up from my head. I assume this is what 90% of the letter writers to the New York Times and any other site would encompass. Does it silence people by encouraging them just to say plus, minus? Perhaps. And maybe that's not a value we want, but I wanted a value that could, I wanted to scale, and I wanted a way to bring together opinions without having me too and get obsessed in conversation. So this is a sieve. You'll see it in a Drupal module coming this Christmas, in fact.
Okay, great.
It is in Drupal. It'll be in a Drupal module that you can use other than just what I have.
Your 2 minutes are up, John. Moving onwards, I would love for someone to speak about language. I would love for someone to come and talk a little bit about machine translation. I know a couple of people talked to me about Wiki and Wikipedia and translation. Can I get a linguist? Come on down.
Can I talk from up here since I wrote a couple notes on my machine?
Absolutely. Just tell me what roles you need.
I'll put some of this stuff up on the Wiki.
Okay.
So I'm not actually a linguist. I'm an investor. Okay. I'm a technology marketing analyst as well. And
completely by coincidence, back in January, I did a fairly extensive diligence project on machine translation. And some of the conclusions lead me to believe there's far more fit to the blogosphere than one might think. So bear with me for what's just going to be a discussion here. So one thing is that understand that machine translation is actually a small business. It's about $100 million in a couple of years, according to the forecasts, which is like pathetic in high tech. They have a great deal of trouble getting any money out of people like me, venture capitalists. The result is that they end up going to your favorite military and intelligence agencies who fund them to do language pairs that they're interested in, okay? So there's crash projects to take Arabic into English. Surprise. They're probably not spending a lot of time on Malay, for instance, at this point. The flip side of that is that the market at which it is part, total translation market, including human translation, is $10 billion. Okay, there's a reason for that. MT sucks, okay? It's usually pretty bad. And most people won't stake their businesses on that. Only people that really have a need to translate large volumes of text, people like us, that don't have critical needs for complete accuracy, use this stuff. Okay, so that's point number one. It's actually a tough, niche-y little business in terms of high tech. Hard to get funded. Point number two, the technology is changing right now. A lot of people have heard about things like Sistran. It's what's behind Babelfish. It actually represents an older generation of technology called rule-based. So a lot of AI and natural language processing, translation is jumping from that to something called corpus-based linguistics. And the real linguists around here will know what I'm talking about. It's a statistical process. You have to spoon-feed it with huge amounts of relevant text. In this case, parallel texts from the two languages of interest, along with some alignment clues. Guess what? That is expensive, because all of that stuff is created by humans. It's so expensive that, for instance, in some of the early experiments, what they used was the proceedings of the Canadian Parliament, because by law, they're kept in parallel English and French. Okay? Point three, the human translation market. And what does that other 99% of the market consist of? Increasingly, what it is a bunch of service bureaus. And the service bureaus now are globally internet interconnected human translators being pulled together by some rather large corporations. Remember, this is the $9.9 billion portion of the market. Okay, it happens that A friend of mine is CEO of one of these companies, so I know a little bit about how they work. Their actual competitive stock in trade is a corpus, okay? They have a huge pile of existing translations they've already done for particular clients in particular markets. So when somebody wants to do something that is relevant, they can call this up and more or less with human eyes fill all this stuff in. This is their competitive basis. It's so important that the internal software developed to maintain these databases is probably worth as much as the entire machine translation market. So guess what? You think they're going to give away those parallel text corpuses so the machine translation guys can eat a chunk of their market. Isn't going to happen. Okay? So you all collectively are potentially in the position of helping create these parallel corpuses that the MT guys desperately need and can't get funded by anybody but the defense agencies. So I just thought I'd throw that out there, that the discussion about open sourcing translation doesn't really need to apply to the code, okay? Because it's not like e-voting. Anybody that is a competent translator can inspect what goes in and what comes out and make sure, you know, whether it's buggy or not, whether it's bogus. The open source needs to be the corpus, okay? And okay, maybe the database that maintains it.
Yeah. Great. So let's stop there for the moment. This can definitely be one of our sort of second half of the session brainstorms on stuff that we actually are interested in doing and actually getting together and doing. And at that point, we can actually go into some detail and explain how corpus-based translation works. Joey, can I get you to come in and talk about what Wikipedia is doing around this?
Actually, SJ is probably much more.
Yeah, do we really want to take Sam out of his...
Sam, you have to correct me if I'm wrong, though, sure. Because I was just observing from the periphery.
So
I'm kind of an observer in the Wikipedia community. SJ's a real participant. But I was just participating when they were about to hit the 1 million articles mark. They decided that they wanted to do a press release. So I was sitting in the chat room, and I happened to have press contact. So I said, I'll help with the press release. And so what happened was there was a draft of the press release went up. Everybody started editing it. Finally, it was locked in, and online on Wikipedia, if you go there, there are a bunch of different IRC channels, one for every language, and then there's one sort of main Wikimedia channel where some of the bridge people hang out. And they said, "Okay, I'm going to go do the French. I'm going to go do the Japanese," and all the people started translating the pages out. And then there was a press contacts page for each one of the languages in each one of the countries. Everybody started dumping their press contacts in there, and then they said, "Okay, you know, France is ready to go, U.S. is ready to go," and at GMT 000, everyone went and sent this press release in multiple languages to all of the press contacts. And Wikipedia has 100 languages, right? And they're not all 100 languages are active, vibrant communities. There's like Klingon and Latin and stuff like that, but...
Actually, Klingon is a comparatively lively
community. If you look at the definition of human in Klingon, you realize that not everything is neutral point of view.
Yes.
But what's amazing to me and what I would really like to understand from the Wikipedia community is how do they manage 100 languages? And then the other thing that's interesting is if you go on the IRC channel, each of the communities in each of the countries are different, but there are definitely bridge people. They're different kind of community than bloggers. Bloggers, I think, are kind of like more egotistical. Wikipedians are kind of like bookworms for the common good. You know, they don't. It's a very different mood. Another interesting just factoid is a lot of the bridge people are women, which is also not as common in blogosphere. I mean, I think the blogosphere is about half women, but most of the people who end up kind of making a lot of noise seem to be men. But what I would like to learn from the Wikipedia community is why is it more successful, it seems, to be at bridging the international stuff? And how do they coordinate it? And I mean, maybe, so you can explain something. Because I've just been watching, and it's much more coordinated. And Jimbo, the founder, says, well, it looks more coordinated than it is. And that might be just me being naive. But
Sam, do you want to go to the retort for a bit?
Thanks. I'd say... A big part of the success of the international communication is that there's a community of people who are, many of them, language geeks who started working on how they would internationalize everything 2 years ago. So there are a lot of people who joined the site because they loved from the beginning that it was in 6 or 7 languages. And then when it grew to 50, they were very excited. So what's that?
Can we get them to help us?
Well, some of them are busier now than they were then. And now it's just a lot of I guess bilingual and trilingual people who are bridging between different languages. But it's very informal. I'd say that rather than having a number of individual bridges, there are maybe 200 very weak bridges, and people just leave a record of what they've done, and they say, "Well, I was able to get the first 2 lines of this press release translated." And someone else comes and says, "Oh, that's terrible," and rewrites those 2 lines, and no one gets around to the rest of it, and then someone spends half an hour and finishes the press release the next day. So what's that? It's translation torrent, and it's not very reliable for languages that aren't very popular, and randomly you'll get half of a Vietnamese translation. But for the languages where there are a lot of people involved, it's actually the hundreds of people who no one really knows very well who show up because one of their friends sends them a link, and they say, "Wow, I can do that," and then they never come back, and they provide some of the better translations. And then there's always, you just need to have someone who can spend 5 minutes looking at it and saying, "Yes, that was right."
So we've got room for about 2 more tools before we take a look at the Arabic language blogging tools. Does anyone else want to get in and grab a 2-minute slot? Doesn't have to be language. Could be a blog platform. Could be a content platform other than blogging. Yes, we've got big wavy arms over here. Come on down. You talk, I'll type.
Thanks. Let's go to identitycommons.net. So what Identity Commons has been working on, I mentioned this yesterday, is the technical and governance infrastructure to do persistent identity, which can be used both for people using a persistent identity across different platforms that they're using, as well as starting to do what was mentioned earlier around having a permalink, but then having sub-permalinks attached to that for the different translations of the same article. You start to use the XRI framework. Actually, if you go to XRI.org, that's the technology that we've chosen to use. It's like basically trying to build another layer on top of the IP address system and the DNS system, like DNS names. And so you'd have an I number and an I name, and they'd be persistent abstract identifiers.
It'll keep come. Talking. It's come.
So that's sort of the picture of what we're trying to do. Our first service, we have the first identity broker is up. So the idea is that you would have a persistent identifier for you, your iName.
Nope.
XDI.org.
XDI.
Yeah, sorry. And then if you click on, here, iName's expensive. Oh, don't go there. Go to XDI and XRI. Explain. Anyways, you guys can go through it. It's very technical. They're open standards. They're both TCs at OASIS. We're inviting people to participate. There's lots of potential uses. We're talking about building an artist registry of works where artists would get an iName and they'd start be able to tag all of their works with metadata tags that assert them as the author and attach licensing terms. Anyways, if you go to 2IDI.com, that's the first identity broker, and the code for that is being released by the end of the month, so you can start an identity broker and start playing away. And if you click on this, you can see a contact gateway. That's the first service that we launched. So you can talk to Victor, but it's a way to give people an address to get in touch with you without giving away your email address, because right now that's the de facto persistent identifier, and it's not really working. It wasn't designed to be that.
Okay, so persistent identity independent of email. One more slot before, who's going to fight for it? Come on down.
Do you want me to use a mic?
Yeah, use a mic and I'll type.
I'm Steve from PRX.org. Our
we're a nonprofit organization called Public Radio Exchange. And there are a few others of us out there. I was just elected to be the one to come down and talk about it. The idea is that we do distribution, peer review, and licensing of radio pieces. We come from the public radio world. So there are quite a few independent producers out there, people at stations, things like that, that are interested in making audio content and have been for a long time, but they don't necessarily find their place on the radio. Right now we're dealing entirely with non-commercial radio stations, and that's really been our focus. The idea is that an independent producer or station-based producer or any kind of radio producer can come here, sign up for a free trial account, and post their stuff. And they post it in broadcast quality audio, which is pretty big audio files compared to some of the other formats that are out there. You see here Sean Cole is a producer at WBUR, but he's putting his own stuff up. And the idea is that anyone can come here, post pieces, and a big part of the site is review. So we encourage other people to come in and write reviews and give feedback. So this is a review by another member who just joined the site. We had never met him before. This is a different independent producer. And the question we asked them is, how much would you like to hear this on the radio? Now, the exciting step which this can take is to go beyond just feeding between producers and stations to other formats. So we talked about podcasting today. That's one big possibility. Also pushing out to other consumer devices and stuff like that. The idea is to give people one place where they can come together and post this stuff, give an easy way to browse it, especially for public radio stations. And we work with them to encourage them to figure out ways to place it on their air. So that's what we do.
Awesome. So I just want to sort of pause for a moment here and thank you, everyone, for the sort of the spirit of the lightning talks. I realize, incidentally, that this is too much for everybody. What this is really designed to do is see if any idea sort of catches in your head. You can find this person later and actually get the explanation for it. If everyone actually sat down and explained their technology, we would be here until Tuesday, and I have to be in New York on Monday, so it's just not going to work for me. What I do want to note is that part of the good news about this is that this is a space right now of tool makers. Some large chunk of the people in the room right now are actively building tools around this space. And what this means is that we have a lot of people who are willing to take on some challenges as far as figuring out what are the new tools that we need to do really interesting bridge work, and then how do we actually get them built. So before we sort of get into that discussion of what are the tools that we need and how do we go about building them, I want to take a look at a tool that has gone to solve a really amazingly important need, which is blogging in the Arabic language. So I don't know who from Spirit of America wants to come down and sort of give this pitch, but I will note that the last time we had a conversation similar to this, which was probably about 9 months ago, right, Jeff? There was a great deal of enthusiasm for the idea of getting an Arabic language blogging tool, getting it to the point where it was possible for people to blog wholly in Arabic. 9 months later, we're now at the point where such a tool exists. And this is an example of just how rapidly this stuff can happen, which I find very exciting.
Log in again. Yeah, I think
I'm going to get out of
the way. I was thinking I was first. So.
You guys get 5 minutes instead of the two. You're the right. Featured speakers.
Okay.
So we were originally given about a month to come up with an Arabic blogging tool. And it almost sort of kind of really works. It would actually be working today, except for I don't think we have an Arabic character set.
Why don't you start by introducing yourself?
I'm Janice Abrahams. I work with Spirit of America. This is Dave
Carter. I'm Dave Carter from MyUpload. Let me do the caveat. We put this on a beta server yesterday before we left. So this is a large audience of very scrutinizing people. That means we will crash at some point just because of that. So I'll apologize ahead of time. I'm just going to reset those sessions. Just chat. Keep them
okay,
off.
Okay, so basically what we did was take a pre-existing, very powerful tool and make a blogging tool, which they've already used for other clients, and also have a publicly available tool as well. And, took about 300, 350 words, translated them into the interface, and you'll see some that didn't quite make it as we go through here. And that was that. A few bumps on the way having to do with Unicode and programming and the usual.
Right to left languages versus left to right languages.
That's fun. Stuff like that. But it actually went pretty smoothly, so I think that's encouraging for everybody. So why don't you step through? You can start with
sure.
the blog.
Sure. Let me kind of explain what you're saying, first of all. What our company does is we build branded blog communities. We're not a movable type where we build blogs for individuals to use. We build them for companies and corporations and things like that to sort of enable groups of bloggers. So this is a great project for us because ultimately when we've got a whole group of Iraqi bloggers, we can aggregate these into a community site. So right now this has our sort of skin on the top. Imagine the skin being Friends of Democracy, which is what it would be before it went live. And because we can skin this application, in this case we just skinned it with Arabic.
Obviously this is the administrative interface.
This is someone monitoring their blog. And because all of you can speak Iraqi, then you're familiar with this. Now I'll show you the English version. So the posts are still in their native language. And we can go through and edit those posts. This is the English interface. So all the tabs and help and everything is already in English. And in the Arabic interface, we would get the same. We just had to switch things like whether, again, we type left to right or right to left. You have to have the appropriate language packs installed and things like that. So from our perspective, there was no new technology. It was all just about translating this language file, applying it to the application. And we set up the application so it recognizes what domain you're coming in under. So in this case, whatever the final domain ends up being for this project, it says, oh, present the interface in this language. When you actually publish your blog, and let me go to it from here because I do speak English.
What's the platform it's running on?
This is running on a Windows 2000 platform. This is running on our blog engine back at our office.
But I mean, what blogging tool is it using?
This is using our proprietary blogging tool. We are a content management company. We build blog communities. So this is sitting on our application. What the blog looks like in the end, again, isn't driven by us. It's driven by templates, which you can go in and change if you want. So if you want this to be a blue background and you wanted this to have multiple colors, you can do that. We support things like attachments. So if you want to do podcasting and you want those attachments to be audio, great, we can do that, which would be another great step for opening up the world. We're not really here to sell the application because it's not for sale that way. What we're really trying to promote is that blogging is ubiquitous now. It's as simple as translating a few things, enabling a whole community of people. Klingon has been identified as our next target audience based on the enthusiasm we got. And
expect 2 days of Unicode pain.
The congrats goes to Friends of Democracy, really, for kickstarting the project.
Yeah.
Can I just say something?
Yeah.
I'm Jeff Jarvis, and this has just been a personal passion of mine by chance. All roads lead back to Hodor this weekend. But when I saw what happened in Iran, and then I saw Zayed and Omar and Mohammed here, a lot of us talked about how, gee, wouldn't it be great to have an Arabic language blogging tool? We blogged about it, and it took somebody to actually do it. So Jim Hake and Spirit of America stepped up and made it happen. And you can contribute to that, by the way. That's the one plug, is you can give them money for this and a lot of other good causes. But I really want to salute Jim and Kerry and Muhammad and Omar, who translated this, and Janice and all the guys that I upload. It's a first step. It's a first thing, right? Now the beauty is somebody else wants to come along and they want to do WordPress in
Swahili.
Great. More. The point is, this is the first step that we needed to make it happen. And Spirit of America made it happen, and I'm personally grateful for that because I think this is going to change the world. I think this is really about enabling citizens across the world to get citizens media. So
guys, how do we get from the existence of this platform to the sort of transformative effect that we've seen in a country like Iran, where there's 50,000, 70,000, 75,000 people using this? What's the strategy for people to start using this?
Probably for Jim to answer.
Yeah.
Omar, welcome.
We have an expert right here.
I'm not sure how many people are going to make use of this, but I believe that there are too many Iraqis who are willing to, who are hungry to speak out. They are just trying to find a way that allows them to post their ideas. And I believe that, I don't know, we're going to find in the next year or 6 months, thousands of Iraqi blogs in Arabic, bringing out enormous amount of stories, information, and feelings and ideas from inside Iraq to the world. I'm not an information or I'm not a technology person. I just help a lot with a little bit with the translation.
All of it.
And we still need your help.
But I'm just happy. I'm so happy. Thank you.
I think if anything comes out of this, though, forget about the companies involved. Someone stepped up and acted as a catalyst to make this happen. So whether you think this should be built on open source, whether you think this should be built on existing platforms or whatever, it doesn't matter. Someone's got to be the catalyst to say, we're going to do this now. We're not going to complain about the fact that it's not done. There's a lot of influential people in the room, so that's a challenge back to you. We've seen the need. There's been dozens of needs identified in the room. So, you know, pick yours, step up, and be the catalyst and pull partners that you met today or you already know, and just get it done.
Yeah, just a few more words on the strategy that Omar was a little modest about what they're actually doing in Iraq. I missed their talk this morning, unfortunately, so I'm not sure how much they talked about Friends of Democracy, which is a separate thing from their blog, Iraq the Model. Friends of Democracy is an Iraqi non-governmental organization based in Baghdad that is working to both help create, support, and inform other pro-democracy groups and individuals in Iraq. And one of the things that Friends of Democracy, you see the blog template here is with a Friends of Democracy branding, I guess you would call it. The blogs that are initially going to be made available, and these will be part of what we're supporting, Spirit of America with support of many individuals here in the country, will be hosting the blogs for free, which is probably, I'm sure, as important as making the tool available in Arabic in the first place. So the idea is to reduce the barriers for people to be able to blog. In this case, they'll be blogging ostensibly largely about elections and democracy in Iraq, mostly through groups that Friends of Democracy and Omar Mohammed and others are working with. So the rollout there is for them to make this, make other individuals and groups in Iraq that are working toward the elections and so forth aware of it, help them get online, do a little bit of training if necessary, and go from there. There will be some other things that they do to make folks aware of this in Iraq. One other thing that we're doing at Spirit of America, just as an aside, to assist the effort in Iraq is providing some funding to the Ministry of Women's Affairs in there. A very courageous woman named Narmeen Othman has a ministry with an annual budget of $12,000. And that's, well, I won't explain why that's the case. We're providing some funding so that they can do, her ministry can create programming that encourage Iraqi women to vote in the upcoming election. Those programs will promote Friends of Democracy at the end, along with the Ministry of Women's Affairs. So brought to you by Friends of Democracy. So there are lots of little things that will add up, hopefully, to build awareness, both of the website, and then people can basically, the screen is anyone who says they are a friend of democracy has a blog. And if they put their information about their cats or dogs on it, well, so be it.
Well, because you're also running a left rail that's going to have promotional information about pro-democracy.
Well, links to pro-democracy groups and the election information, that sort of thing.
I'm wondering if I could ask a slightly devil's advocate question, which has to do with how you decide who deserves to be considered a friend of democracy and who gets to have the free hosting and who isn't and what they have to, you know, how does one disqualify oneself from being a friend of democracy? And, you know, if one is trying to be pro-democracy but is also kind of anti-American at the same time, how do you deal with all of these political issues?
It's a lot easier than you think. Basically, anyone who says they are gets a block. And then you have to say it, they just basically get a block. The screen, and Omar will have has some ideas beyond this, but each page will have a link that if, you know, our criterion is that if people are using this to actively incite violence, then their blogs will be shut down. And if Friends of Democracy became a terrorist organization somehow, then we would cease to provide them with this. Terrorist organization being actively inciting people to go out and attack government and civilian personnel in Iraq. So it's a pretty low threshold for people to be able to get into this. Omar and the others have some ideas or have some thoughts about other criteria that they might want to use in terms of racist language and that sort of thing. That's up to them. They're going to manage this. People will report sites that they think are inciting violence to Friends of Democracy. Friends of Democracy will decide. Once it's in their hands, we are out of the loop unless somehow it becomes clear that this has entirely changed its character from anything to do with democracy to becoming a free-for-all violence site. But that well, it's a commercial tool available from iUpload, and that's what it's based on.
It'll be open sourced, and the way we build communities now, pretend this wasn't about politics. Pretend this was a corporate blog, and someone said, I want you to blog as an employee of our company. And there's rules and regulations around that. So I know that goes against most of the people in this room because, in your case, your blog is an open personal space. Most of the businesses we're in, the blogs are sponsored by someone, monitored by someone, and represent a group of people. And if you don't want to be in that group, then you go off and get movable type or whatever. But that being said,
there's no reason. I mean, there might be, actually. I shouldn't even say that. There's a lot of almost ready-to-go Arabic tools, which I noticed when I surveyed the market. The only problem was I only had for a week, so I did it the easy way for me.
If you're doing open source and you see this and go, darn, someone did it, don't. Continue on. And someone back there said, I hope that... Totally agree.
Our basic point of view is freedom is good. Freedom of expression is great. And suddenly, in about 2 to 3 weeks, the people of Iraq and the rest of the Arab world, anyone who has any, who
wants to register on this site and have a free blog is going to have one. And as long as they don't encourage people to kill people, that is fine with us. And I fully expect that people will criticize the policy of anyone you might imagine on these blogs, and that's fine too. That's part of what needs to happen in Iraq, in fact.
I really don't want to get hung up on whether iUpload is open or not. I think the point has been made that there's other alternatives and other projects out there. Jim has a question on this, and then I want to move on to the general brainstorm and specifically off the platform.
Well, I just had a more service question. First of all, is there a way for Google to search this, which I would find really interesting? And is there going to be some easy kind of machine translation connection? Because it will become
that's an oxymoron, easy machine translation.
Yeah. Well, but if you had a kind of a combination of some rough way for Google to search it, and then you had sort of these rough, you know,
nebulizer
things.
The translation problem that you've been talking about.
I'm just trying to figure out. You're going to create a pool here of really interesting conversations in Arabic. And it would be really fascinating if they were also somehow searchable and accessible in something
we're
like
that. We're talking about it. It's an economic question more than anything else for us.
Everything will be, you know, readable by regular search engines. So if there's something machine readable that will do an accurate version of this, there's nothing we're going to put in the way to prevent that.
Does Google search Arabic?
Yeah, sure.
So they will.
Okay.
Thank
guys,
you.
Thanks very much. I want to... Applause is a good thing. I want to sort of change this dynamic a little bit from sort of show and tell and try to get more into a discussion dynamic, and specifically to sort of ask the question, we've been talking all morning about different things we want to be able to do, about different things that, different ways we want people to be able to interact, different sorts of questions we want to ask and answer. And I'm interested to try to get some sort of open brainstorming for the next half an hour or so on tools we'd like to see happen. Part of the good news of what's happened here is that there's clearly
evidence that there are a lot of people out there willing to build tools, whether they're open source or closed source, if there's demand for those tools and there's a clear demonstrated need for those tools. So I actually think we're in a very interesting position to sort of step up and start talking about what we need and potentially finding people who are capable of actually building it. I'm hoping we can also do this discussion in a way where we can sort of keep track of what's going on. So I wanted to ask if someone will take responsibility for sort of doing brainstorm note-taking on the wiki. Hodor, I don't know if you want to do that or if you want someone else to do it so that you're more free to talk. Is anyone sufficiently wiki familiar that they're willing to sort of transcribe on the wiki? Do you want to start a second page, and we'll just start going on there? But I'm actually looking for someone in the audience who will actually handle some of the typing on this so that we can... Fantastic. That would be great. So, okay. So does anyone want to sort of raise the first issue of something that they want, a wish list here? What do you want for bridge blogging around the world?
Not a designer, not a programmer, just a user. And what I need more than anything is categories. I'm really getting into the use of categories as a way to get metadata into my blog. And I want to be able to assign posts to multiple categories. I want to be able to create categories on the fly. And I want to have subcategories within categories. Hopefully all accessible with maybe a pull-down menu so I can do it in the process of posting without really interrupting my normal workflow.
We do for the recording, yeah. It really helps us a lot if we can. I realize it's a pain in the butt.
This is kind of just a disclaimer. I'm an investor in Six Apart, but our removal type has subcategories and multiple categories, and for nonprofits, it's free. So if you fit in that category, that's okay. But generally speaking, I just want to take it up one level. So if you look at Flickr or Delicious or any of these sites where you can actually assign tags, there is an emergent order coming up. So there are you can go and see the top tags and see which ones are popular. So instead of this, and David Weinberg gave a great speech at the Library of Congress. You can find the transcripts on his blog. But he talks about how before, anything that was miscellaneous wasn't considered knowledge. And the ontologies were created by things like the Dewey Decimal System. But now what we have is citizen ontology, which is people tagging photos, tagging bookmarks, tagging their blog entries. And what will be really interesting to see is the democracy, sort of the emergent democratic ontology of tags. And I call it getting taggy. But I think that instead of having this top-down pre-assigned categorization for all the stuff on the net, it's really interesting to see what becomes the categories. And then what happens is you can create communities around the tags as well. And so just people who are building blog tools, think about how you can import tags from outside things. Think about how we can put tags into RSS feeds. And think about how you can take those tags to create directories that look like Google, who aren't assigned by a central authority, but rather by the people.
I want to make sure that this conversation is including not just the sort of hardcore tool builders, but what we're particularly trying to do is get the people who are actually involved with starting blog communities or starting different sorts of communities. So let's try to frame some of the discussion in those terms as well.
Yeah. I'm Tim Jarrett. I used to work at Microsoft, and one of the things I did there was the Microsoft blog portal. We ran into a lot of issues around the sort of things that you're describing when we were putting that together, mostly because even though it was all within the walls of the same company, we couldn't get everybody to agree on categories. What I found toward the end of the project was it was less about kind of a blogging tool problem and much more about a taxonomy problem, a problem of translation. So I think you probably need to put on a different set of skills when you start to tackle this. Getting categories emerging across the web is great unless six of them are all about the same thing, and then getting them translated to multiple languages becomes challenging too. So I think that's where some of the challenges are going to be. If you want to take categories to the next step, which I think is above the level of categories on one person's blog and into more what Delicious and Flickr are doing.
Things we need other than categories.
I just want to capture what was said this morning about security issues and make sure we hit all those on the wiki in one spot. The ability to host things outside, the ability to, and this probably goes to things like ICANN, too, Joey, to find ways to create a domain name structure so that it can't be blocked by bad guys, the ability to maybe have RSS feeds and content of weblogs and such, including not just text but photos and audio and video in a BitTorrent-y kind of world where it's just sitting out there somewhere without a home, so it can't be blocked and it can be captured and sent around in new ways. Hodor's talked about the ability to use RSS to feed email because email is not blocked as much. There's a whole host of how to get around tyrants and make sure that this stuff doesn't get blocked, both on the creation and the reading.
All right. We're going to call from Jeff Jarvis for anti-tyrant tools. What else do we want? Incidentally, while we're getting other stuff from earlier today, we should probably get down Hodor TV as an idea. And I would really love to hear people start getting concrete proposals as far as translation. Because there's been an enormous amount of talk about translation. Let's get into some concrete proposals.
So here's a concrete proposal for translation. I'd love to see a blogging tool that gives you an option of flicking on and off automatic translation for little snippets, post by post, comment by comment. And even if right now we can only do that in 10 or 12 languages, that would be an amazing resource.
Sam, how does that work? Is that using Sistran? Is that using machine translation?
Yes, so hooking into something like Sistran and then allowing someone to just toggle how they're viewing each part of a post. So even if you speak German, you might be reading someone's German blog and you just don't understand one of their posts. It would be great if there were just a little set of links and you could quickly see what the Sistran translation is.
Also a translation request system so that whether you want it translated one way or the other, there's some place to go to ask the community of translators and the multilingual to help.
I want to add one other idea, which is to have a central repository for where people can register if they are multilingual bloggers or for Wikipedia posts that are in multiple languages to help with what he was talking about in terms of gathering the data necessary to make open source better open source machine language translation in the long run.
Okay, so we're talking not only just repositories of stuff that needs to be translated, but indexes of people who want to get involved and who want to translate. You're next.
One of the great things about RSS is that you could easily email it, as Jeff said. And one of the greatest things that I guess could really beat the censorship or a great way of get around with it is that if any sort of application could use RSS in sort of a peer-to-peer way, that would be really, really amazing. The only thing that remains is the security and the genuine and how it can make sure that these are the original RSS that someone has produced. So if we could have that P2P RSS reader, then nobody can control anything, censor anything. The other thing that I was trying to suggest, it's not exactly a tool, but I guess it's very important because we have seen some awards, some contests for bloggers and others, but they've always been about web blogs, not about posts or postings. I guess there should be some awards about posts and in different categories, and it would be, I guess it would be much, much more effective.
We're going over to Joey up here.
Again, this is a plug for Creative Commons now. Don't forget to put your Creative Commons license and allow derivative works on your site, because a lot of people that want to translate your stuff are afraid or don't have the time to ask permission. And when people ask permission when you have a Creative Commons license, make sure you tell them, don't ask permission because permission has already been granted. I mean, the whole Creative Commons is supposed to lubricate stuff like translation. And you'll be amazed at how many people will translate interesting posts into other languages verbatim. And they'll give you Technorati or Trackback, some way to find it. And then you'll find it go around in a lot of languages. And so please don't forget that.
Okay, another critical piece of the translation equation, making sure that your stuff is translatable in terms of its legal license.
I'm not sure whether I understood Hodor correctly, but if it's possible to create a selection of posts, not just blogs, the best posts get to the selection, get translated. For instance, I'm interested in the Middle East. I want to watch Turkish, Israeli, Irani, and Arabic blogs and get someone to select best posts, translate them, and deliver to me. I don't know whether it's slide.com, slide, or whether a system of peer rating would be helpful here. I don't know about translation, but something like this would be fantastic to have. But I define what I'm interested in.
Right, so that's a really interesting idea. What would be involved with identifying the 10 best Turkish posts on any given day, getting them translated into a number of languages, having them out there as far as a very real way to sort of get access to this? Who's next?
Delicious for blogs, that would be amazing.
Say more.
Delicious for blogs, that would be amazing. If you imagine some sort of delicious only dedicated for blogs, and because I know Schwartz is working on is his name Schwartz, I guess? Yeah. Is working on some language recognition system that automatically recognizes the language and then distribute them, and that would be amazing because it automatically calculates or finds out which posts are most popular in that day, and it's really, really an amazing, advanced, progressive system.
Who's next? I'm going to start calling on people otherwise.
I guess this is more of a question regarding translations and the Wikipedia. I was just browsing on my laptop, and it seemed like some of the entries had different content in different languages, so it wasn't really a translation of the same content, but kind of a different set of content by different authors. So I wonder if anyone has any knowledge about that issue in Wikipedia.
Is anyone able to address that? So I'd love to get some thoughts, particularly on security and particularly on constraining who gets to look at your blog and why.
I have some ideas to share. I think blog can be separated into two steps. One is write. So if you think of this step, anyone can be a blogger. So you can write it down and store it in your local machine. The second step is to publish. If you want to publish, you can select a destination to publish. So what I imagine the future blogging tool is, you can write anytime, anywhere, and then you can select different destination to publish. So it's a tool that can accommodate this function. Also, you can publish to multiple sites simultaneously to support different kind of objectives. So it's one imagination. And another one is that we can integrate social networking with the blogging tool. So you can publish your content to the people you trust or the people in your different rings. For example, one ring is your research team, and you can publish blog to the research team only, not publicize to other people. So it's the second imagination. Actually, we have a team in China doing such things now. Yeah.
Okay. So the idea would be that when you're blogging onto your own machine, and then you're making choices depending on what the content is, whether it goes out just to you, whether it goes out to a trusted group of people, whether it goes out to the world as a whole. Sure. Another interesting possibility of that could be one of the ideas that's come up more than once today is the idea of blog servers in different countries. You could also imagine if you had material that was going to be particularly controversial or particularly sensitive, potentially doing it in a different country.
Yep.
And doing that with that tool. Someone else want to go up here? Back to Jeff again. Why is everyone always across the room for this? And why is no one else?
Conspiracy, damn it.
It's not a tool, but it's a need. Is ways to help support access. When the Iraqi world started opening up, Americans wanted to give to tip jars to Iraqis, and there was no way to get any asset to an Iraqi to help pay for access in any way. And I don't know what that structure is. Maybe it's cell phone time. Maybe it's some other currency or some other way. But ways that charities and people can help others with the access, which is the first critical tool.
So that's absolutely huge, Jeff. And Jeff is now talking about how do we add money to this equation, whether that's being able to send a tip jar to someone or pay for their access or pay for them to get a digital camera if you're interested in the work that they're doing. Obviously, PayPal works fairly well, but only if you are able to link it to a credit card or to a bank account or something along these lines. A lot of the parts of the world that we're talking about, this is a huge and unsolved problem and actually a really interesting one to go after.
I just wanted to bring up, this is John, I just wanted to bring up categories because we had a dearth of questions a while ago. I see one of the important parts of categories, which I've worked on, is not just content-specific categories, but what type of content is question, proposal. I could read a lot more feeds which were just one-line questions that just people had looking for information. I'd prefer that to a mailing list or trying to find the next latest and greatest knowledge base server. So I'd like to see greater, more specific categorization of types of posts and content.
Great. If you can hand that down to Britt Blazer over there.
The asset of America, or the element of America that everybody loves, is money. I'd like to go back to Jeff's point, and I'd like to introduce Roger Desai, who has done a lot with the wireless in Iraq. And his suggestion 6 months ago about that was that you could give people phone cards, which you can reload over the net. If you have the ID, you can reload somebody else's phone card. Very low tech. Now, all we have to do is have a dispersing agent who knows how to unload and hand cash in return. We thought about this for the ladies doing sewing and the great sewing centers that Spirit of America did. So if we can solve that dispersing agent problem, we're on our way.
Why don't you hand the mic over to Roger real quick and just let him talk briefly about how that system works. And Roger, particularly how, if we wanted to roll this out much more globally, right, what I really want to be able to do is tip my bloggers in Ghana. How do I do this?
Yeah, I think one thing that people often ignore is that the phone as an environment to work with is phenomenal, and there's very little innovation that's been done on phones. Phone companies are, you know, we all know they typically suck at most things that are innovative, but they're very useful. I mean, you look at a lot of the things that are happening in Russia right now with Putin. The latest thing he's going after is the one of the fastest growing mobile cell phone companies in Russia. So it's something that's really not understood very well. There's a lot of opportunity there. It's a metered environment. People pay up to 10 cents for an SMS. That is very low tech compared to, you know, an instant message. So I've spent the last 10 years just looking at how to be innovative in the phone market. And in the case of these phone cards, it's a huge underground economy. So if you were to refill someone's phone card over the web, there are companies, ones that operate in Iraq as well, that would assist you in the financial system that is. So if you wanted to give someone $10, you could essentially do that over the internet, and their phone card would be filled for $10. And that's a commodity where people trade like currency. They don't necessarily use those minutes. They trade them or resell them.
That exists now?
Yeah. You can do that right now in Iraq. So if you want to give someone $10, the best way to do that is to refill their phone card. And there's lots of things like that about how the phone system can be utilized for innovation like that.
Okay, we're going to go up to Alex Stefan, and then we'll come over to you, Jeff.
Following on about the comment about money, of course, money is good, and we all want to see more of that going to the right places. But that's not the only resource that folks in this room and folks in the blogosphere have at their disposal. A big resource is attention. And I think that it would be interesting to think about, I don't know if there are necessarily technical tools that will solve all this problem. I don't think so. But think about ways in which we might channel attention to people who deserve it and otherwise wouldn't get it. I think one of the open secrets about the blogosphere is, as much as we talk about meritocracy, it's really a lot about who you've had a beer with, you know, and figuring out ways to widen the circle of people who can be in those rooms, I think is really important, and figuring out ways both within specific language communities, but also, you know, transcending boundaries, going, you know, in the kind of bridging ways we were talking about this morning, figuring out ways to institutionalize or make more common connections between people who currently have the ability to project attention at people and people who deserve more attention seems to me to be an important thing to do.
Alex, get concrete for a moment here. Give me a proposal for how we do this. We have some people in this room who have attention to spare.
Well, you know, you and I talked a month or two ago about why couldn't you match existing bloggers who have some influence to really hot emerging bloggers in the developing world, say. and create kind of a partnership thing where they're learning from one another about their problems and challenges, and at the same time channeling channeling energy and information and energy and attention to the person who doesn't necessarily have as much. I think in a similar way, there are a number of blogs out there that take specific areas of concern on a global basis and providing those blogs with the impetus to cover more information coming out of developing world blogs or out of people who just haven't yet gotten a lot of information, I think is good. I think you could also do it institutionally. I think that there are organizations out there which are set up to bridge, the gaps between what we in the developing world are hearing and what we in the developed world are hearing and what people in the developing world are saying. And there's no reason why that couldn't be done in part through blogs. And then conferences and yada, yada, yada.
I think another way to look at it is as a news service. Hoder brought together bloggers and translated their posts about the election. Omar and Mohammed are planning to do the same with the election in Iraq. You pull it together. Well, part of what you want to do is get to mainstream media. In Iraq, you want to get to Iraqi media and show them that there are these sources out there. You also want to take the same stuff and bring it out to American media and give it legitimacy and show what's what. And so I think that you look upon this as a news service and create and say, here's what's going on in the country from the citizen's viewpoint. We give it legitimacy. We distribute it and get it out there, and that attention is that feedback loop that comes from the same of a serious blogger going back. Another one that we mentioned at the last BloggerCon that was here in, I think, the same session that led to this, is the idea of kind of adopting blogs. I mean, believe me, I have no connection in my life back to Iran and Iraq, but I've taken an interest in them lately, and my bad high school German comes in handy. I think that we all have interests around where you start to take that on. It may be an odd interest for you, for people in your blog. You bring attention to it. Those bridges get built, attention is paid, and it's a good thing.
Absolutely, and feeds back to the money. Let's face it, if people have larger audiences and a mechanism to transfer funds, they're going to have more money.
Yes. Porter made an interesting point about, getting these things onto email. They can't block email. Hotmail, Gmail, all those things are just too pervasive. So we're talking about, getting blogs out to that big mass media that's too big for them to shut down. Maybe our goal should be making blogs less about news and controversial topics and getting, every teacher and every layperson on these common everyday topics. And blogs would be so pervasive, the political messages would just be buried inside that. They couldn't shut it down. So, let's stop blogging about blogging and top stories and start getting teachers to blog, what's going on in their classes and, municipalities to blog, how they're doing their spending and things like that. Then it's so pervasive. The really tough messages will be so buried you can't block, all blogs without reading them all.
While I have the mic, audio tools I find very difficult. Video tools I find difficult. I think more we can train not only in blog tools but those kinds of tools to people to get them to use other media.
Any of the PRX people want to talk about audio tools and progress that's getting made on audio tools or anything that's getting done around audio tools?
Yeah, I think the podcasting stuff, especially enclosures, I think podcasting is a bit of a misnomer because it could be used, enclosures can be used for a lot more than just sending to iPods. I think that's exciting just because there is a standard for sending it and it works over RSS just like everything else. So I think that's a great tool and I think that's going to go in more directions. In terms of production, I think that some of the free open source tools like Audacity are very useful, and I think actually what we need more than more tools for production is to be able to point people toward tutorials for how to do that kind of production well.
In
multiple languages. Yeah, and I think Audacity is pretty well internationalized, but they may need more translations, I'm not sure.
Is it possible that we do need sort of an entry-level tool? Audacity is actually a pretty powerful editor. Getting to the sort of movable type version of Audacity, is that a possible project? Is that something?
I agree. I think that would be a great project. I brought that up on the developers list at one point, but wasn't able to drum up enough interest in it. But I think like a simple Audacity or something like that would be great.
It would be valuable, I think, to get some
count on Moore's law to make the hardware cheap. And we could use some actual low-cost turnkey kinds of tools for this stuff. They're actually just appliances. Something that basically soup to nuts finishes. You start it. It's done. It's a device for this purpose, and not much else. Instead of, I love the general purpose computer, but regular folks even today find these things hard to use. So let's take advantage of this. There's lots of manufacturers in other parts of the world who will probably build them cheap if we want to do it.
And this was one of the sort of main themes of Jonathan Zittrain's talk last night, was this idea that we may start getting to the point where you have devices that have very specific capabilities that we're now used to doing with these multifunction devices. You can imagine getting to the point where Jim Moore's camera, as he's taking snaps of all of us, is posting directly to a blog, and that's not very hard to do. You can go a little bit further and go from the mini disc recorder where you do the interview and have that put up on your website essentially as a podcast using RSS and an enclosure. We're not very far away from that technically. We know we could hack a way to do it around our PCs now, but it would probably only be usable to a couple dozen people. Whereas I think Dan's point is that once these things start getting more and more like appliances, they start becoming useful for a lot more people.
Can I just interject one short nonlinear thought here for people to think about during the break? Because we discussed it here for a second, but I just wanted to just capture this. Is getting everybody, like the most popular Persian post or the elections or these kind of event-based important issues is kind of interesting. But sustained interest is another thing, like Jeff is doing. But having beers is also important. I mean, it's very difficult to organize and cause attention to happen. And people send me a lot of emails, can you blog this, can you blog that? I'm sure everybody gets this. But it's not easy to organize, and I want to sort of just key that as a thought that people should think about, that what is it that we're asking for here? Because just always having the top five blog posts from Iran come out in the blogosphere once a month is not, I don't think, what we're asking. And so I want to have a better idea of what people are asking for.
No. I don't think that's that topic at all. I actually think it gets quite a bit into what you and Jim are going to be talking about, which is these problems are never just technical problems, right? We can come up with a very clever technical solution in this room to identify the most popular Turkish blog posts, and someone can translate them. You're raising a much bigger issue, which I know you're going to hit during the next session, which is how do we get people to actually pay attention to it? Yeah, particularly if you take the microphone.
Awesome. Okay, cool. I just want to add to that because it's true. We're going to have this challenge in the next session of moving us back up a level, and we might as well cheat and try to get it going now. And it's like as you come up from the bottom, from the tools, we really do need to think more and more about what we are trying to do with these tools. And ultimately, if we're trying to create the future or we're trying to change the world or we're trying to create social movements or we're trying to improve democracy or all these things, save the environment. Those are the higher level purposes. And we need something in the middle. I mean, we need to think about, okay, so if you got if you could get attention to move any way you wanted to, what's the system of attention? What's the cycle of attention? What's the nature of attention? And then where does that feed into action? That's what somehow we have to start, I think, doing here.
The good news is you guys are running the next session. So we're gonna cut you off for now, we're gonna go over.
So this is kind of slightly off tangent and a different sort of a thought. So I hear a lot of, requests and tools and technology about finding topics similar to mine, promoting viewpoints similar to mine, just basically about reaching out to others who think like me. And I think it's kind of important that there be mechanisms and methods to also go beyond that. So how about some things in, like in Delicious, like now for something completely different. And now here's a blogger who is just not like, there is no similarity at all. I mean, I think that if we just, every tool.
But,
yeah, just like, something. So there should be some methods for us to be also reaching out, some random, this is a random link for you here today.
Actually, Blogspot does have that random link now, but I think some sort of Amazon recommendations for blogs, but not only the ones that are close to what you usually read or write, but is opposite, that would be amazing.
I think disagreement.com has real potential here. I think if someone wants to actually look for ways to read your blog and find the person least likely to agree with you and sort of push you forward from there, that might be a great way to go. Let's take two more, and then let's break for the end of the session. Who's in for
just
two more?
For Hoder, bloglines has something like the bloglines.com. That is something.
Has something random or has something for
no,
your
it
office?
It has related links, and it also you can also give one, you know, summaries of what you think of other people's blogs. You can see what other completely syndicated what people say about your blog, what subscribers say about your blog.
Well, don't call me in English. I mean, speak to blog on that.
Anyone else? Does anyone else want to get into the tools discussion? Yes. Two microphones, no way.
I guess this is a little bit different, a different use of blogs, but since there are software developers in this room, there's a very popular site called sourceforge.net, where essentially people have developers get together and actually work on projects together. So one of the great things about the blogosphere is that you've got a lot of people with a lot of knowledge that could potentially work together and actually solve problems. So the other kind of tools you can integrate into blogging is a project manager, like a document manager, so that people can, for example, a bunch of teachers might want to get together and work on some new lesson plans offered to the school districts. This way people from all around the country can add suggestions, can join a project, can work on these lesson plans, and try to push it out there.
Okay, so getting beyond just actual blogging into project management of one fashion or another.
There are already a project management tool like blogging called projectpath.com. You can check it.
Project Path. Can you pass the mic to those up behind you?
I mean, I've been working for quite a while trying to integrate disparate tool sets just like that. Our approach is really, I work in civic space, and our approach is really to make the tool sets very generic, like kind of like Basecamp style. So you can just plug them in and people can use them whatever scenario you want. But getting out of blog land and into kind of organizing people around causes and things like that, it's a very different territory. And it's hard. There's not many people who really are working directly on that.
Does anyone else want to? Great. We've got Britt over here.
The Spirit of America site that we worked on this summer and rolled out six weeks ago, we made blogs an object. So anytime there was a new page, it gets a blog automatically and the ability to comment on it. So when you start thinking a blog is simply a process object, if any topic is interesting enough to spin off like a new wiki page, it gets a blog. It gets comments. And further, what we did was if anybody comments, of course they have to register to comment, they have a blog. Because they get a page, they get a profile page, that gets a blog object, and their comments, wherever they appear, end up as comments on their blog. And suddenly, I got a blog. Who knew?
Can we pass that up to Sam up in the corner? Just pass it across, Brett.
Thanks. To go along with the idea that someone mentioned earlier about the ability of writing whatever you wrote with one tool and then deciding where you posted it. It would be great just to have a tool that let you identify yourself in a way that lots of different blogging platforms and blogging networks and social networks would accept, so that you wouldn't have to have your blog as your identity. And I know people like Dave Weiner sometimes talk about how your blog suddenly becomes your international identity. But people change blogs, or they have 5 or 6 or 9 blogs. It would be nice to be able to write whatever you want to write, not think about it, identify yourself to people who cared so that they would know that you belong to a certain group of people whose opinions you cared about on the subject of Arabic translation and troubles in the U.S.
So is there anyone else dying to get a comment into the session?
I just have one dumb question.
Shoot.
I was wondering, it was sort of back
a ways when people were talking about promoting worthy causes, worthy people, people who need help. Is there such a thing as like an ad feed people could subscribe to that they could make collaboratively? Does that make any sense? Like, could we make like a little RSS box people could stick on their website that says, here's who these people think are worthy, you should too? I mean, is there a way to do that? I don't even know.
Are you talking about something more?
Friendly AdWords? I don't know. I have no idea what I'm talking about, except for that I see a need for if you trust people and they had good ideas.
I think you may be talking about clock rolling.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that. No?
It wouldn't just be like, sorry? It wouldn't just be like throwing somebody a link. It would be like
things that I want him to tell me what I should be thinking about, people I should be paying attention to. I could subscribe to that on my blog, and people could say, oh, look, there's this, or a group of people.
Mind control.
Okay, so I think we would all be happier with an air conditioner. Let's do this. Let's close on this session at this point. We've got some great notes online that Rebecca's put up. There's a whole bunch of possible topics to pursue, whether it's categorization, whether it's translation, whether it's financial mechanisms. There's a lot of possible conversations we can have in the hallways and over dinner. When we reconvene, we're handing it over to Joey and Jim, who've already sort of shown a little bit of their hand, which is the question of how do we get this beyond just to talk about the technology? How do we get this into a conversation about getting people to care about these issues? And how do we turn the energy that we've got into this room into a set of projects that we actually get going forward?
And Ethan, Rebecca, good work today.
Thank you, Jeff. So if we... Yeah. You're not done yet, so let's get back at 3:45 and we'll have a final session and go from there.
One last thing.